to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there from San Francisco. How is everybody? How are you all? Still following up from that amazing week, everything that happened in Congress. I hope you all followed it. I hope you're as excited as I am. Anyway, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by the mighty Kraken. And today I've got a special bonus release for you. I've got an interview with Jessica Chow from Ledger X following their announcement that they are the first exchange to launch physically settled Bitcoin futures. But I've just landed in San Francisco. I'm pretty tired, so I'm going to get this out now, but I do have a quick shout out to all my amazing sponsors. So firstly, Kraken, the best exchange in the world with spot, futures, margin trading, their OTC desk and indices. They have all your trading needs covered. And with security in their DNA, it is the only place that I now buy and sell Bitcoin. So join me in supporting Kraken. Head over to kraken.com, which is K-R-A-K-E-N.com. Next up, BlockFi, the future of Bitcoin and financial services. They offer crypto-backed loans where you can get a loan based on your crypto holdings. They also offer crypto interest accounts, which I am using. So you should definitely do your own research, but if you want to find out more, head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Next up is Dropbit, the best mobile wallet for Bitcoin, where you can text and tweet Bitcoin to your friends. It is just like a Venmo for Bitcoin. If you want to find out more about that, head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And lastly, but definitely not least, is Accounting, the best tax calculator in the market. Also includes an amazing portfolio manager, and it connects to all major wallets and exchanges. You can find out more about that at accounting.com, which is accounting.com. Okay, onto the show. And a couple of weeks ago, Ledger X announced that they are the first CFTC-regulated cryptocurrency asset management platform to offer physically settled Bitcoin futures. So last week, I flew out to New York and headed over to the Ledger X office and sat down with Jessica Chow, their chief operating officer and risk manager, to talk about what the license means to the company and to Bitcoin as a whole, as well as their upcoming release of Omni, which will open up Ledger X and the regulated futures contracts to US retail customers. So, why does it matter that speculators or businesses can now bet or hedge in Bitcoin and have this settled in Bitcoin? Is it a bullish thing that miners can now bypass fiat in this entire process? And what went into getting the license and being regulated? Could this be the beginning of the end of Bitcoin's volatility? Look, there's so much in this. I even got the full New York soundtrack on this one with the police cars and fire engines going by. But I think you'll love the show, especially the traders. So hit me up if you have any questions. You know my email. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Hello, Jessica. Thank you for inviting me to your office.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show and congratulations.
Thank you.
What was that like then? You were the first to the market with a physically settled Bitcoin future.
So it's not our first time being first. You know, we actually had been working with the CFTC back since 2014, when we were the first to get a license even for any physically settled derivatives at all. And we got that license in 2017. So, you know, it's in a lot of ways this time around, while the significance of being first is more of note because there are obviously larger competitors out there. For us, it was a lot easier than that initial journey. But, you know, overall, I think we have a good relationship with the CFTC. We just focus on making a good product that satisfies all the regulations. And it's gratifying when the regulators reward that with, you know, the appropriate licenses.
So why are you guys able to always do it first?
So the first time around, it was because we were just really early. We submitted our applications initially in September 2014. And I think that was arguably too early, but that's why we were first the first time around. This time around, I think it's just because we're pretty good at what we do. We don't do a lot of stuff around here. Our breadth is not very wide, but if it comes to the CFTC and Bitcoin derivatives, I think that's really our bread and butter. So this time around, I think we just did it best.
So you're going to get the first ETF as well?
See, and that's where, so we purposely don't do anything in the SEC space. Yeah. And I don't really want to, I don't foresee LedgerX really getting into the SEC space. I have my own opinions on ETFs, but I think we want to stay hyper-focused. And I think the success that we've had to date is because we've been super laser-focused on this one area and creating great products in this area.
All right, so let's dig into the background. because I want to know about you and I want to know about the company. So firstly, can you just give me your background? I mean, I know it, of course, but it'll be great for the people who listen to the show to know your background and then how you came to form LedgerX and why you became involved in the Bitcoin space.
Sure. So personal way of background, I was math and computer science by training at MIT, along with Paul, who's my husband and our CEO. And then when I graduated in 2006, basically, even at MIT, I think it was something like 60 to 70% of engineers just went and worked in finance and consulting. It was a huge, a lot of jobs at the time.
You were at MIT?
Yes.
Right. So I was there a few weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I've got my show coming out tomorrow is with Neha.
Oh, great. Yeah. It's really great. I haven't, I haven't gone back to recently, but it's great to see the stuff that they're doing in the space. And
amazing.
it makes a lot of sense. I mean, they have a lot of different departments that where I think they can make meaningful contributions to crypto.
Yeah. And their Bitcoin Expo early in the year was probably, in terms of speaker list, was probably the best event I've been to.
Yeah. It looked really good. I didn't go, but it looked like it was a really solid event.
Well, you missed out. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
So then I worked in finance for a bit. So I spent 5 years doing high frequency options trading at Goldman Sachs. So that was really algorithmic trading, pretty quantitative models. And then after that, I moved to a different trading desk within Goldman. I moved to the franchise side, which is more customer facing, taking down large trades, and which was really informative for me for just how Goldman operates as a franchise. And then kind of in parallel, Paul also worked at Goldman. He did more quantitative stock trading. And he had left Goldman after, I think, 4 years to go to Y Combinator on the West Coast to start a different unrelated company to LedgerX. But it was at that time, so he was in the summer 2011 batch. And so that was when Bitcoin kind of first had that price spike up to 30. And so he got very interested in it. We took an interest in it as a, you know, both from the, I would say, the computer science side as well as the financial side. And actually, he wrote up this, I remember it even from that summer, he wrote up a pretty long thing about how it's strictly superior to gold and why we should invest in it and take it seriously. And so we did kind of play around with it personally, but I think in terms of the ecosystem, it was still, you know, it was really, really Wild West and early days, and best practices for security weren't established and stuff. So we mostly just followed it. And then a couple years later, when we talked about doing derivatives for Bitcoin for a while, we saw it as a real need. So we were always set on that. And then, but the regulatory uncertainty was really the big question mark. So in late 2013, November 2013, there were the Senate hearings where it was kind of clear that the government was not going to shut down Bitcoin. They were at least going to take some approach to, it might take a while, but they're at least going to take some approach to how you can operate a Bitcoin business in the U.S. And so we kind of decided to just go, you know, at that point, we just decided to start the company. I think we were probably a little bit naive in terms of what it would take to actually get licensed. But I think maybe as entrepreneurs, you need that that naivete sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I completely agree. And I think a lot of the innovation that's happened in the Bitcoin space is people just going, well, let's just go ahead and figure it out anyway. But it does feel like, or for me, as an outsider looking in at America, that all the regulators are a lot more open-minded to Bitcoin than I would have first thought they would be.
I mean, I think, you know, when I look at the U.S., I mean, I think that's generally true, though it has taken time. You know, it's been a number of years now. But I think if I look at the U.S. versus other, you know, some other countries or versus Europe, I think a lot of it is driven by the entrepreneurs, where the entrepreneurs kind of force the hand of regulators, whether it's through, you know, what we did where we just submitted an application, or whether it's through entrepreneurs who will just operate if there's no clarity, or, you know, I think it's really driven by the private sector, and the public sector then just has no choice but to keep up. But that said, you know, I would say with us, we deal with the CFTC, and they're quite, I think in general, entrepreneurs do not give the regulators enough credit. I think they're quite sophisticated in their understanding of cryptocurrency and a lot of the related issues.
Yeah, I'm quite interested to see who's going to take over after Christopher Giancarlo, because he's been very open-minded, very forward-thinking with regards to Bitcoin. I think he's been a, you know, a real asset to the innovation within the space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, obviously we got all of our licenses, you know, under him. I believe Heath Tarbert is going to take over. And I think okay. he comes from a treasury background. So, you know, different, not the same, you know, private sector background that Giancarlo had.
So what licenses did you have to get for your initial launch?
We had two licenses. So we had an exchange license, or we have, I should say, we have three licenses now, but initially it was two. One is an exchange license. So first we got the swap execution facility, which allows us to do swaps on an exchange. And the exchange is a pretty easy license to get. It just matches trades. The other license, which is the more critical and difficult one, is the derivatives clearing organization. And that one is a license that allows us to custody both fiat and cryptocurrency, but in our case, Bitcoin, on behalf of customers and for customers. And so those two licenses were both necessary for us to initially launch back in 2017.
Yeah, and it's funny because people are always saying, oh, when are the institutions coming? And people want institutions coming because they want the price, obviously, to go up. But you only service institutions right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the definition of institution is, so first, I think it's a little bit different depending on your context. So for us, it's limited by the swap execution facility license that we have. And so that basically means roughly any individual or entity with over $5 to $10 million. So, you know, while we are institutional, we service a number of high net worth individuals, some that are maybe high net worth from the traditional space, and then some whose net worth comes from the crypto space from having been in it for a while. And then we service trading firms and we service smaller hedge funds. But I think sometimes when people talk about institutions, they're thinking more of like, you know, the Goldman Sachs's of the world. And I think Bitcoin's still a little bit early for those guys to get involved.
Why did you target institutions?
It was kind of going back to how early we were and the path that we saw to really getting a platform that was regulated and up and running. And starting with a base of institutional customers was, to be quite frank, just a lot easier from a banking point of view and from a regulatory point of view. You know, it gave the regulators comfort, it gave the banks comfort. And so it kind of helped us get over that initial line of getting the license. And then it allowed us to prove to the regulators, prove to the banks, mm-hmm. Prove our model. And then it was a lot easier to get the retail license after that.
Okay, so I want to get into derivatives. I want to know, though, from you, why are they important? It's more than just having a product out there that people can use. They're actually important for market structures. So I read, I can't remember if it was on your website or a PR release, but you talked about what happened during the financial crisis. And I think I've got the quote here down. I can read it to you. The structural problems are strikingly similar to causes of the financial crisis of 2008, when bilateral OTC credit default swap trades between banks were opaque and secret until the problems become too large to ignore and at a hair's width of being unfixable. So can you tell me about this? And because it's more than just about having a product in the market, right?
So, yeah, I think the derivatives products in general are an important addition to markets. Mm-hmm. They provide an element, if you compare it to, let's say, just trading Bitcoin. You know, in our case, we list options. And derivatives like options provide additional factors or ways that people can get exposure. So, for example, options have a strike price associated with them, which is the price at which people can buy or sell Bitcoin. And then they have an expiration date associated with them, which is the piece that actually makes them so interesting and makes them so valuable in a lot of ways. And those are pieces that you don't get from just buying and selling options. And there are reasons why those can be very important. So, for example, in Bitcoin, you know, a lot of people are focused on the halving, which is expected in May of next year. So there could be a lot of reasons why you'd want a derivative contract that expires in June 2020, something that far out that's more specifically structured to be able to hedge risk that people might have around that, whether they're a miner and they expect the reward will go down, but whether they're a miner or whether they're more of a consumer-facing company that is paying transaction fees and sending those to the blockchain. So I think they're important contracts, but they have to be done correctly. And that's why, you know, Ledger X, it took us a while to get our licenses because we were so focused on making sure that we have the clearing set up. And the clearing is where we custody the dollars, we custody Bitcoin, we guarantee every derivatives trade. And I think some other approaches could have been and were faster to market without that element, but that's exactly where you get into counterparty risk. You get into a lot of the issues that ultimately led to 2008, when you had the swaps default and the cascading effects of everybody really getting hurt from it.
And you saw that happen.
Yeah.
You lived through it.
Yeah, right? Paul and I were both at Goldman at the time.
What was it like?
You know, honestly, we were probably too junior to see the really interesting stuff.
Okay.
But I think it was the right, at that point, I'd probably been at Goldman 3 years, and I think it was the right level of really learning a lot about how, kind of about convexity in real life and how things can get really bad really quickly, and a lot of correlations and the way that you view the world can completely break down. And I think that there's no teaching that. You just almost have to live through it, and then it kind of stays with you for a while.
Okay. All right. So physically settled Bitcoin futures. Why is physically settled important? Why is this an important addition to the market? How is it different from the current Bitcoin futures?
It's important for a couple of reasons. One is that we want to cater to customers who deal in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just here to create a synthetic contract that's just a speculator's market. And we talked about how derivatives can be and are important hedging tools. But if you look at it, a lot of the hedgers, whether in the traditional commodity space or in Bitcoin space, the hedgers deal in the physical. They're miners that are earning Bitcoin, or they're individuals that hold Bitcoin. And so for them, the most appropriate hedge is actually something that settles to the physical, because that's the world that they deal in. They're not just financial players. And it's important to us because we want, even dating back to when we first started LedgerX, one of the views that we had was that companies could warehouse more Bitcoin risk if there were derivatives products for them to hedge. And we want companies to be able to, companies that are providing real services using Bitcoin, we want them to be able to grow their businesses by having the tools to be able to manage their balance sheet. We think that's just really good for the Bitcoin ecosystem in general. So it's important in terms of the product side. And then I would say in terms of the day-to-day, it's also important because we can just take Bitcoin as collateral. About a third of our customers, our participants, only ever deposit Bitcoin with LedgerX, and they can deposit it 24/7, 365. So, if you get a huge $200 move at 10 p.m. on a Thursday, they can just send this Bitcoin and they can trade it. And that's something that you can't really do in the current banking system, and it's only really possible because we deal in the physical Bitcoin space.
So what are the biggest challenges then that have been involved in creating that? Obviously, custody is one. Security is obviously an issue. Can you talk me through that? And if there are things you can't tell me, I understand.
I mean, at a high level, the challenge is entirely custody and security, for sure. There's no question that when you deal in the physical, that's, I think, where, for us as a technology company, where a lot of our resources have been spent and a lot of our mindshare goes. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it if you can ultimately provide a better product to customers. And, for us, I kind of always say this, and I think people maybe don't believe me, but it really is true that we custody Bitcoin on behalf of customers for purposes of settling derivatives transactions, but I don't really want LedgerX to be a centralized custodian, because that's not what Bitcoin is about. If Bitcoin came around and then the world looks like you have, these large companies that are like the new versions of Bank of New York Mellon custodying your Bitcoin for you, I don't think that that's a great thing. I really do think that people should hold their own coins, and we just hold them on for purposes of the derivatives transactions.
Have you outsourced the custody?
No.
You're doing it yourself?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that leave you with a few kind of like sleepless nights sometimes thinking about things?
I mean, it's probably on par with, I guess, how other Bitcoin companies feel that also do the custody. But it's important if it's such a critical, and this is not just specific to custody, but in general, if there's some element that's so critical to the business, I think it's important to do certain things in-house, and it's important for these stakeholders to kind of understand the magnitude of what they are doing and the responsibility that they are taking on.
Yeah, I think it's also quite nice that when you mentioned previously, you're talking about, keeping it as Bitcoin, it's better for the Bitcoin space. I guess as we have more companies adopting, accepting Bitcoin, it starts to become a kind of a circular economy. And I think that's going to benefit Bitcoin and hopefully get us away from some of the volatility eventually. Do you feel similar?
Yeah, I think the more that people are using Bitcoin, the more that there are use cases that are not you know, I think a lot of the volatility is driven by speculation. And mm-hmm. speculation is, it's an important part of markets. I think, you know, speculation sometimes gets a bad rap, but it's not that different from just investment and just allocating capital. You know, so people, a lot of speculation is just people allocating their capital into crypto away from maybe traditional markets. So I think in general, it's an important part, but a lot of that drives volatility, especially if the market can't always absorb it, or if you have, you know, margin leverage trading overseas. And the more that it becomes stabilized and used, I think the volatility will come down. Derivatives products like options in particular are known for reducing volatility as well. I think there's a lot of studies in other markets that the introduction of options usually results in lower volatility.
Did you also, was it you also said that physically settled Bitcoin futures are less open to manipulation?
It might have been, yeah. And because ultimately the contract, so if you think about how the contracts settle, the settlement is that you just get Bitcoin. So if you buy a futures contract, when it settles, you just receive Bitcoin. How other contracts settle that are not physically settled, so for example, the cash settled futures that exist right now, is you get a US dollar amount that is equivalent to essentially how many contracts you own, the price you own them at, and then, you know, the difference between that price and a settlement price. And where the manipulation comes in is, what is that settlement price? Because, you know, Bitcoin, it could be, you know, 13,000 one day, 11,000 another day, and it can move really easily. And so I think a lot of the concerns, which are very valid concerns, are that, you know, if you settle to, you say, okay, this spot exchange at 4 p.m. Eastern, this is going to be the price at which this contract will settle. Well, it doesn't take a lot of money for somebody to be able to move it. And then now that really changes the payout from the contract. And I think that's why you see a lot of these futures contracts being used more for trading rather than people holding for investment. But physically settled doesn't have that issue. You're going to get a Bitcoin no matter what.
Okay. All right. So you're live.
Yes.
It's not open to everyone yet. You're open to institutions. You've got a separate retail product as well. Omni.
Right. Yep. So we've been open to institutions since October 2017. We have a few hundred, around 300 institutions on the platform, and the volume's been going really well. We had our second quarter of 2019 was our best quarter ever. And that was just with the institutional volume. And then
talk about how much volume?
So the second quarter, I think, it was about 200 million notional of derivatives that traded.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. And I think it was, you know, it was really a testament to just a lot of the work and infrastructure that had been put in place. And then some credit to the market for, you know, more interest in derivatives. I think when anything moves, people come out of the woodwork and they're doing everything from buying puts because they're worried that, you know, we crash another few thousand dollars, to selling calls because the volatility is so high that the premium that you can get from selling call options is really not insignificant.
But you're not far off then from an annualized $1 billion in...
No, not at all.
Which is a nice target number.
Yeah. And I mean, I think with the retail platform, we'll see. We're going to take that very carefully. We want to make sure, it's very important to us that everything works well. But I think seeing the wait list and the demand that we have, we're really optimistic about the growth.
So is the retail products Omni?
Yes, Omni.
Is it actually being used by people at the moment, or is it being tested?
It's being tested right now.
Right.
Any day it should be live. Yes, including my mom.
Yes.
Who gives very frank feedback.
So when that product launches, what kind of KYC do you have to go through to be able to use it? Could I just use it?
Well, so you'll have to go through through KYC. We already do, you know, even for our institutional customers, we already KYC everybody who mm-hmm. comes through. So I would say it's pretty standard. It's not more invasive than if you deal on any regulated exchange, but we do touch fiat. And so I think that's really the distinction, is that when, you know, if you deal exclusively in crypto, and I think there's a lot of great value in the companies and things that do deal exclusively in crypto, but that's a really different game than if you touch fiat. And it's important to have companies that touch crypto and touch fiat so that people can get their money into crypto and if they need out of crypto.
Right. But how would you differ from regular exchanges? For me as a non-trader who's played a little bit with Coinbase Pro, a little bit with Kraken, how is Omni going to be different?
Well, so I mean, I don't know those. I don't know the platforms themselves to comment on that. But Omni is a derivatives platform, and so it's as opposed to, I think, some like spot exchanges where you can just buy or sell Bitcoin. Here, you'll have access to both buy sell Bitcoin to a wide range of options. So you can trade options out to December 2020 up to a $50,000 strike, and then. Additional options like some of these, the halving contract and some of these more exotic derivatives that we plan to offer.
We're getting the proper New York soundtrack today, aren't we? Find it when I'm always here. So you've actually got a contract for the halving.
Yeah, so we, and, okay. And this is actually one that we have, it's filed with the CFTC, so it's, you know, on our website. It's, so this, the way that this particular contract is designed is that it's a binary option, and it pays out if the halving occurs before a specific date in the future.
Right.
And so this is important so that people can, you know, speculate, bet, hedge when that halving will happen. Particularly, you could think about miners who will have, you know, large economic exposure to it. And then with these contracts, we can essentially back out the date that the market is expecting the halving to occur.
So it's going to be a really interesting event because there's multiple factors at play here. Obviously, the subsidy is going to drop in half, but also with the subsidy dropping in half, there's less Bitcoin. Is it like goes to 900 a day Bitcoin will be released to the market?
That sounds right. I have to do the math.
So therefore, there's less supply, so the price might go up. But if the price then goes up, then the ASIC manufacturers will increase production. So timing that and playing that is going to be very interesting and very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, we already see people, we have options that are, some of our largest open interest options are June 2020, and we see a lot of activity in the 20,000, 25,000 strike area, because
wow.
I think it's kind of speculation around exactly this issue that you're talking about. When the mining reward goes down, are miners going to be compensated by, you know, an increase in price? And then also, you know, the impact on transaction fees. I mean, we don't have a contract listed on this yet, but I can envision a derivatives contract based on transaction fees for if people assume that when the reward goes down, you know, the fees are going to go up. And what's great about these kinds of contracts is that, you know, we're talking about manipulation. These are basically impossible to manipulate because they settle to the Bitcoin blockchain. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to, you know, manipulate the Bitcoin blockchain. It's by far, out of any financial contract I've seen, these are the least susceptible to manipulation.
Who are the people either side of the trade? Is it you or is it somebody else?
It's always other people. So
okay.
LedgerX just sits, we sit in the middle. We're just the platform, exactly.
Okay.
We do the non-sexy stuff of just the infrastructure. And so we just sit in the middle. Participants come, they match trades either on an anonymous order book, which we have, or through a negotiated trading mechanism where you do know your counterparty, and people use that for block trades. And so when those trades are matched, LedgerX takes care of making sure the collateral is there, of holding the collateral until expiration, of guaranteeing that both sides get paid off, and then also doing an underappreciated aspect is also doing all of the reporting so that our participants never have to worry about all of the required regulatory reporting.
Right, okay. So, but do you create the contracts?
Yes. So we basically design and create what the contracts are. We usually do those in conjunction with participants, though. So we make sure that there's sufficient demand. We want people trading a lot of the same contracts. But yes, we do that.
Okay. So you'll have, obviously, say me as a buyer wants to, you know, buy a futures contract. The person offering the futures contract, could that also be me?
No.
It could be. So that is a specific institution who does that. Are they like a market maker?
Well, so we do have market makers,
okay.
Yes. So it could be anyone. I mean, sorry, to be clear, it can't be you trading against yourself, but it can be any other individual. So
yeah.
I'm not allowed to be on the platform, but if I were on the platform, I could be on the other side of it. So it could be, you know, maybe if I was just an individual and I had a futures contract and I just wanted to sell it to get some dollars, I could do that. We do have market makers. And so their job, as you're alluding to, is to generally be on both sides as people come in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it could be any sort of hedger that has different constraints. You know, I think derivatives are great like that. There's a lot of different ways that people use them.
And what kind of interesting pricing are you seeing ahead? Is there anything really stand out?
So I think the main thing is that if you look at the Bitcoin volatility curve, so typically, like if you look at stocks, typically the way the volatility curves look is that the higher volatility is more to the downside. So it's more that people are either worried about or would anticipate very large, rapid moves to the downside. But the way that the Bitcoin market is priced in terms of our options, the higher volatility is definitely to the upside. So we see a lot of the 25,000s, even the 50,000 strike calls traded out in December 2020. So we see a lot of people kind of betting on those higher prices up there.
50,000?
Yes, the 50,000, the December 2020 50,000 strike calls traded 30 times, quantity 30, and I think the price was $1,350, and this was maybe last week. So wow. That gives you a sense of what people are interested in.
There's some optimism there. All right. In terms of working with the regulators, you said you have obviously a good relationship with them and you speak to them regularly. Is that a situation whereby you have to have an ongoing debate? You go and meet with them and you sit with them and you talk with them. Is that how it works, or are there like formal processes you have to go through?
There's both. So there's a lot of formality. I think now we're pretty good at it. It was an easy process to navigate. There's a lot of formality, but I think typically people, and we did this too, typically people have informal conversations first just to sort of sort out the contours of what it is that we're looking to do and make sure that you're not going to get a yes or no, but at least make sure that you kind of feel that there's a general path to do what you want to do. And then it kind of goes into more of the formal process.
And are you touching anything outside of Bitcoin?
Right now, no, just Bitcoin.
So are you a Bitcoin maximalist platform?
Well, look, I mean, if we can list derivatives on other cryptos that fall into the CFTC jurisdiction, we will. We're not going to turn down that business. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to support custody of other coins. It's just that right now, Bitcoin's the only commodity per the CFTC. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't say I'm super unhappy if we have to focus on Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin's elegance and simplicity leaves a lot to be desired from other altcoins, for example.
Yeah, I've heard very similar things with regards to companies when they've started to look at adopting Ethereum. It doesn't matter if it's custody or if it's some kind of trading. Always find there's a much more complex product to work with than Bitcoin. People often say one of the beauties of Bitcoin is it's just so simple.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. And I think that's why, I mean, it just so organically took off, is that it was easy for people to start to wrap their head around.
Are you surprised at how far it's come?
I mean, not really. I think in the broad scheme of things, it's probably, you know, I don't think it's how far it's come. I think it's just the path. I'm surprised at the path it's taken to come here. Like, I was really surprised about that whole, like, blockchain, not Bitcoin thing in, like, 2015, 2016. Like, did not anticipate that.
That was Jamie Dimon.
Yeah, and that it just like took off and companies pivoted. It was just that was nuts. And then I think I was probably surprised by the number of altcoins that like really, you know, popped up in what, 2017 or so. And I mean, not just the number of them, but just how those kind of took off too. So I think I've been surprised about the path, but not necessarily like, you know, where we are today.
Oh, so you expected Bitcoin to go and get big?
I mean, we expected it to work. I don't know if I put a number on how big we expected it to get, but there was no question that when we started LedgerX, we were just all in on Bitcoin.
Where's your conviction come from?
I think it was really when it was well before we started LedgerX, actually. I think it was really back in 2011. And again, what sold me was that the fact that it's clearly superior to gold, like in like every single way. And so that as an alternative already, it showed that it was doing something that was not possible before, and which in general is already a powerful thing. And, you know, we operate in a regulated space, obviously. And, you know, we report things to regulators, but that doesn't underscore the fact that I think it's incredibly powerful that, you know, you can just walk around with, you know, a USB in your pocket and nobody would know how much Bitcoin you have. So I think it's elements like that were just not around and not possible before.
Peter Schiff wouldn't agree with you, though.
I know, there's a lot of gold maximalists out there, I guess.
Yeah. I still, even as a Bitcoin lover, I'm still struggling to explain to people why they should care. I mean, I've been talking about it on Facebook again all year, putting little messages out. You know, now might be a good time to buy. I think at about 4,000, trying to explain it. It's like a brick wall. I can't seem to get through to people and explain it to people. How do you sell it? Because you've obviously got your mum involved now.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even know my mom was... Because we always talked about it, but I didn't know that she was actually sold on it until recently. But, I mean, I think it's hard... You know, one of the difficulties is, especially in like the U.S., for example, one of the difficulties is that we don't have a lot of the frictions that, you know, Bitcoin supposedly will fix. So, for example, like, you know, we use our credit cards, we interface with the banking system. It's not really that much of a headache, and I don't see why we would shift those payments transactions to Bitcoin. So I think the use cases are a tougher sell in certain environments. But Bitcoin in general, you know, and this is what I tell my mom, for example, it's a great alternative. Now, do I think my mom should put all of her money into Bitcoin? Absolutely not. But I think it's an alternative. It's a reasonable alternative. I think people in Venezuela would welcome an alternative like that. People in other countries would welcome this alternative. And so it offers something that other assets don't. And that's why I think it warrants some amount of investment and attention. But at the same time, I'm pretty realistic that a lot of the people who live comfortable lives are not going to be touching the use cases, you know, every day.
Right. And we're here pretty much in one of the financial centers of the world. We're in New York, right? Are you finding a shift here? Are you finding that Wall Street starting to accept it more, or is there still a lot of friction there?
I think Wall Street's, they're at that level of they're interested. There's a little bit more knowledge than there was before. But I think, I mean, Wall Street's going to do the same thing it always does, which is that when there's enough opportunity, they'll get involved. And then otherwise, they'll just sit on the sidelines.
They just want the money.
Yeah.
They just want to make the money. So if you now look at the ecosystem, there's obviously, you've got competitors coming in. There are going to be other physically settled future products. Do you see it as a scenario that it's competition, or do you see the scenario that you grow the category together?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bitcoin is still in the nascent enough stage that new entrants into the market are not, it's not zero sum, and it's not competing in terms of the opportunity set. You know, just, and again, it's because Bitcoin is so early that I think more, you know, we want more fiat on and off ramps, on ramps in particular. We want more products that people have access to. We want different market structures, so catering to different types of participants. So I think Bitcoin's early, and we're not worried about competition.
Do you worry about changes in regulation, too much regulation coming in? Do you worry about what might happen with FinCEN? Do these things kind of play on your mind?
Well, so we don't interact with FinCEN, because part of the reason we went down the CFTC path was that, so we are, by being federally regulated, we're essentially exempt from the state regulations, and we didn't want to have to deal with 50 states. We wanted one federal regulator. But, you know, in the U.S., I don't really worry about the regulations that much. I think the regulators are, and actually I can say this for the SEC as well, even though we don't deal with them day to day, I think the regulators are being very reasonable. They're thoughtful, their concerns are very legitimate. I don't think they're, you know, going to do anything brash, and they're, if they were going to do anything that would limit innovation, they would have already done it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not something that I worry about much.
I think they care more about Facebook, Libra coin at the moment.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's funny. I mean, I was kind of, I'm not the biggest fan of Libra, but I was surprised actually at how, and I was like, maybe it's just because the Democrats are angry because they think that Facebook is why Trump won or whatever, but I was really surprised at how quick the response was to that.
Yeah, I haven't seen the hearing yet, but David Marcus was there this week, I believe.
Oh, was it this week?
I didn't, I think it was this week. Yeah, it's funny. I did an interview with Brad Stevens and Spencer Bogart over at Blockchain Capital.
They're investors.
Oh, right. Okay, cool. So I had a really good chat with them. But one of the things that Brad said that was really interesting, he said Libra's a win-win for Bitcoin, because if it launches, it exposes billions of people to the term cryptocurrency, and hopefully and most likely some of those people are going to migrate to Bitcoin. But he said if it doesn't launch, if the regulators prevent it launching, it's a win for Bitcoin, because it shows the power of Bitcoin, that you can't shut Bitcoin down, but you can shut something like Libra down.
I mean, it's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting point of view. I mean, I think the second point is where I'm not as big a fan of Libra, which is just that it is obviously, it doesn't allow you to create and use a digital currency outside of a third party. Like, the fact that you can shut it down very clearly shows that there's a third party there. And I think there's some difficulties in terms of implementation where, you know, once you start getting into stable coins, you're at the mercy of like banks and stuff. You know, it's not, It's just not a cryptocurrency.
And it's boring.
Right. It's not really... I guess people try to say, like, oh, it'd be like a bridge currency, but... It's just not as interesting. You're right. Boring is right. It's just not as interesting as Bitcoin.
I'm kind of split on Libra though. Some days I'm like, oh, this is going to be cool. This is going to be great. And then other days I'm like, oh, it is boring. So there's not going to be a Libra futures coming to.
I mean, if it was deemed a commodity, maybe we would. But it's not going to be deemed a commodity. And I think it's the reason why I think I'm a little bit maybe slightly more negative than what you're saying about Bart or Brad. I forget which one is that. There is an element, you know, even though I kind of generally think Bitcoin's early and things are positive sum and we're all going to expand the pie, when these efforts come around, there's an element of, you know, attracting developer talent and resources and time and energy that I think otherwise maybe would actually go towards Bitcoin, which would probably be a little better.
So you as somebody active in Bitcoin... Your husband's active in Bitcoin. Do you guys ever stop talking about Bitcoin? Do you have like a no Bitcoin rule in the house?
I mean, we're always talking about work, and I think we just reached the point where we realize we can't avoid it, so we may as well be productive about it.
Do you have a lot of synergy as well in your kind of views, or do you debate it?
There's no question that Paul sets the vision of the company. Uh-huh. I think that's what, you know, we're both good at different things. I'm a little bit more operational day to day, probably better at the regulatory stuff, but there's no question that he's much better at the like long-term thinking. And that's why we got into this is because I think he was better at, I found Bitcoin very interesting, but he's better at kind of seeing how things can play out.
And as you look at the entire market, as a company and people who've got a lot of, you know, you're invested in this, probably personally, you've got your company, you've dedicated, this is your mission now. As you look at the Bitcoin ecosystem, what are the things that you think are important? What are the things that you would like to see change? What are the things that really stand out to you that will help improve the ecosystem?
I would like more focus, for sure. I think too many companies are trying to be all things to all people. You know, it's... We want to do custody, and then we want to have a broker dealer, and then we want to do a payment system. And I think the focus is important to build great products, and it's important. More specialization is important for Bitcoin, and then I think a little bit more. Maybe it's better now, but at least from the last few years, a little bit more resiliency where, you know, Bitcoin, it's going to go up and down. There's going to be dark periods. You know, there's going to be difficult periods, and I think. You know, what we saw a couple of years ago is too many companies that I think were doing good work kind of tried to pivot to other things that maybe were more, you know, opportunistic. And so just more focus and resiliency.
More focus on Bitcoin and less on altcoins?
Or just focus on in terms of what services people are trying to provide and not trying to be, kind of the comparison I used once is companies are trying to be like AOL where they like literally do everything. It's like, we're going to be in Bitcoin space, we're going to do everything. And I think then they just end up with a lot of breadth and not a lot of depth in terms of offering great products and doing great work. So
I kind of feel like you're talking about Coinbase here.
I'm not going to name anyone.
Well, I would name Coinbase as one in that category because they do everything. They do, you know, and it's kind of got a bit ridiculous. When I first signed up to use them, it was so easy to use and it was perfect, right? And that's where I bought my first Bitcoin. Well, actually, that's not true. The first time was local Bitcoins a long time ago. But when I came serious about Bitcoin, it was so easy. And now when I get an email and it says something like, learn about 0x and get some free 0x and here's your credit card and here's, you know, I think they've lost focus. This is entirely my opinion. This isn't Jithika's opinion at all. This is entirely my opinion. All right, so look, if people are interested in this, what's coming up? What are the next steps? You know, you said there's a big waiting list, but how do people use this?
Yep. So we're launching Omni very soon, within days, and we're just working through the waiting list. And I think it's a great platform for people who want, whether it's access to Bitcoin or trading just Bitcoin, as well as access to options. I think options are a very important tool, and they provide a lot of different ways that people can get exposure to Bitcoin, can bet on Bitcoin, and even in a more risk managed way as well. So if, you know, let's say you don't necessarily have enough money to buy one Bitcoin, well, you can buy some call options that, you know, provide a little bit more leverage and you'll never lose more than the amount of premium that you spend on the options.
Okay, so that's interesting. You kind of tempted me here. And I banned myself from trading. Okay, so it launches in the next few days. Are you feeling excited, nervous?
It's not our first time launching a product.
Yeah, of course.
I think the first launch was, I was a lot more nervous. Okay. This one, I think we have, you know, we have a very stable platform. We understand all of the elements that go into a launch between getting the customers ready, the regulatory, making sure that the technology is tested. So I'm sleeping better ahead of this one than I did the first time we launched.
Okay, so if people want to find out more, though, where do they find out?
LedgerX.com, LedgerX.com. And they can apply for Omni, and we're sorting through the wait list as quickly as we can.
How big's the list, can you say?
I think it's about 3,000 right now.
Wow, okay. Can I get near the front of it?
We can't show preferential treatment.
You can't show preferential. Do you know what? I shouldn't go on it. I don't even have a BitMEX account. I've never created a BitMEX account because every time I've traded, I've been terrible at it.
Actually, it's funny. I also am a terrible trader. I'm better at operating an exchange.
Yeah, I'm better at producing content. That's what I see. Okay, and if people want to get hold of you, Jessica, how do they reach you? Who do you want to hear from? Who don't you want to hear from?
Well, you know what? As of earlier this year, I'm on Twitter now, so people can reach out to me. My handle is my first name, Juthika. And really, anyone. I just like, you know, like meeting folks, talking to them about what they're doing, what we're doing. So
you'll get the crazies now, though, because you've said
anyone. You know what? But I haven't gotten that many crazies yet, so I'm very optimistic on the Twitter thing.
I should show you my DMs. Some of them are crazies. All right, well, listen, look, thank you for having me here. This is great. Can't wait to get this out.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so what did you make of that? It's pretty exciting, right? I think the more regulated offerings like this one, the better for the whole ecosystem. And Juthika and LedgerX are now paving the way with these regulated contracts. And it's even cooler that will soon be opened up to retail investors too. I'm not going to lie, I have thought about putting my name on the Omni waiting list, but my previous experience as a trader says I should stay away, so I probably will stay away. But if you are interested, you definitely should go and check it out. They do have a wait list that you can sign up to. And you know what? Juthika has some really cool insights into the market too. You know, people are betting on $20,000, $25,000, even $50,000 contracts going into 2020. And also, actually, I think somebody told me there's a $100,000 contract, but I haven't checked. But it's all pretty exciting, especially everything that's happening in Congress. So the bull market might just get started soon. Anyway, listen, I hope you enjoyed this one. Sorry I'm rushing this one out, but I just wanted to get it out to you because I've got to get up early tomorrow morning to do another two interviews. So yeah, any questions about it, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.